Okay, good evening, good morning, and good afternoon, and welcome to the Hibsid podcast with me, Rabbi Simcha, and our producer, Sherry Barkley, who's on the levels. Shout hello, Sherry.
Hello.
Okay, so tonight's going to be a somber and serious episode. Usually there's a lot of frivolity, but tonight we're dealing with some serious subject matter. For the last 10 years and change, I've been the rabbi in Pratt Institute, and we've opened a gallery synagogue, reaching out to the community in Pratt and Clinton Hill. And unfortunately, last Friday night, a local synagogue, a dear partner of ours, because Chabad rabbis, we're all brothers, and an attack on one Chabad house, an act of vandalism on one Chabad house, is really an attack and an act of vandalism on all Chabad houses and really all Jewish institutions throughout the world. So I was very troubled Motzei Shabbat last week to hear about the terrible act of vandalism at the Chabad of Bushwick. So tonight's guest is Rabbi Menachem Heller. I said Heller. Tonight's guest is Rabbi Menachem Heller. Say hello.
Hello, and thanks for having me.
We had to convene an emergency podcast. So I saw the story, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it was after midnight. This was last Shabbos. By the way, you know, we are very close in geography, so I think we have somewhat of a revolving door that many of the same congregants attend both our Chabad houses. And they tell me that you go late. That's the word in the neighborhood. I think I've become the pregame, and they magically find their way over to Bushwick, and they tell me that Bushwick goes late. So, Rabbi Heller, I'm going to tell you what I know, and if you could tell the listeners exactly what happened. And firstly, I'm so sorry, and how is the family?
Thank God. The family is doing fine. You know, we were shooken up, but, you know, coming back to ourselves.
Okay, so from my understanding is this was after midnight, I think around 2 o'clock in the morning.
A few minutes after 2, it was actually 2:10.
Wow, by the way, the only time I'm in my synagogue at 2 is on Passover. So there may be people in my synagogue at 2 o'clock in the morning, but you are a more committed rabbi than me because I'm fast asleep. I just leave the crowd and tell them to lock up. Okay, so it's after 2 o'clock, and there was some sort of instrument, a brick, thrown through the window of the Chabad house. Am I right or wrong?
It wasn't a brick, because we didn't find the stone. As a matter of fact, the noise was so loud that we didn't even know that the window was broken when it happened. Wow. We only realized when we went out that the window was broken, and we didn't see a rock or anything.
So you're sitting at the Shabbos table, and there's a loud explosion.
Really loud, yeah.
The front window is smashed to pieces. And where was your family sitting at the time?
So I was sitting with the you know, members of our shul around the table, and for bringing, as we say, sitting around, shmoozing, singing Shabbos songs. And my wife and children were sitting towards the front of the shul where the window was. They were playing on the floor, the children. My wife was on the couch there, you know, with the baby, which is just feet away from the window when
wow.
It happened.
It's very scary.
Yeah.
So your wife must have been extremely afraid. I'm sure the kids were very scared.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened in that moment? You did you see the vandals?
The moment it happened, we just jumped up. We were in shock. I just grabbed the children, and we ran to a corner where we would be more safe. And then I was able to peek and see through the window, through the door, which is like a glass door, like a typical storefront door. And I saw the vandals walking away.
Wow.
But we couldn't see it actually happening because we have a curtain.
And you're based in the Loom on Flushing Avenue. And my understanding is there's a few storefronts.
That's right.
And the lights were on in all storefronts.
Yes.
And this was thrown through your window. So clearly
exactly.
This seems to me more than a coincidence.
Right. Nothing came through. They used like a bat or a stick. And they took it with them.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is really an act of anti-Semitism. I know the word terrorism is bandied about a lot, but this is clearly anti-Semitism, and this was very, very scary. But the one thing that I've taken from this, and firstly, thank you for coming, And I think I was very touched. And a lot of people sent me the message that you put on Facebook. And you were very strong and very defiant. And at the same time, extremely compassionate. And you really put out a message of hope and tolerance. If you could just tell the listeners a synopsis of what you wrote on Facebook. And it's been shared like hundreds of times. It really...
Yeah, it was shared hundreds of times. It was seen by tens of thousands. I can see how many people saw it. The message was that despite, you know, us being cautious of what happened and being aware and knowing of the circumstances that we live in today, we have to continue as Jews to do what Jews do, and that is to spread light and do what we need to do to bring more people in, to study more Torah, do more mitzvahs. And I believe that the positive things that we do is really the news, not this, not these two people who did something so crazy, but rather the fact of the community that we have been able to build. So many different kinds of people coming together every single Friday night and sitting together for so many hours. That's the message, and that's what we have to make even stronger and stress that part. That's the story here.
Beautiful. Actually, talking about community building, I would just like to, on a side note, that you mentioned off mic that you are the original beard in Bushwick. You were in Bushwick before it was cool to live in Bushwick, before the gentrifiers were advertising rooftop swimming pools. You were in. How long have you been in Bushwick, and what was the origins of you moving out to Bushwick, and how have you seen Bushwick change, and what's it like having the opportunity of spreading traditional Torah values in a neighborhood like Bushwick?
Well, we started being active in Bushwick about 12 years ago, actually. We were doing little events here and there, holidays. It wasn't steady. And the reason was we noticed that many people were moving from Williamsburg over to Bushwick, the original hipsters, the real hipsters, right, what we call them. And then we started having our steady place where we are right now about over 10 years ago. And we've seen the change. It's very interesting to see that change, as you describe it, the rooftop swimming pools.
Right.
But the I think what's unique about Bushwick is that the openness and the fact that every kind of person, the way you express yourself doesn't matter, feels comfortable. It's not just that it's okay to express yourself in any way, but you actually feel comfortable doing it. And I think we were able to create that in our shul, that anyone feels comfortable coming to our shul, even if they come in at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right. As they do.
As they do.
Very often.
And it's very often that we go till 4 in the morning, too. Very often.
Dedicated.
It's a very normal thing.
Wow. It's usually around midnight that I turn into, I make the polite exit, and I leave the crowd, and then they go to Bushwick. Sherry, I think the way it works is that having, you know, Chabad centers that are not so many miles apart, that when I get like troublemakers or the rowdy crowd, I just send them to Bushwick and vice versa. I've been trying to send Sherry for years, by the way, but it's not happening. Okay, so there was one, you know, there are no, I don't want to say silver linings, but something that has inspired me, which is, you know, there is a saying in the Gemara that, you know, according to the camel is the load. And, you know, why do bad things happen? There's only one answer, which is I don't know. I don't know why there's an increase in anti-Semitism. It's a terrible thing. I have a child that's learning currently in yeshiva in Pittsburgh. I'm going to be going tomorrow for Father's Son Shabbat. So I'm inviting all my congregants to go to Bushwick this week because to show some solidarity. They go till 4, so they can make both services. But I've been extremely inspired by the response. Sherry told me that you've been trending, that which you've gone viral. That like this story has gone all over the world. I was even getting calls from people telling me we're so sorry what happened. How can we help? I know there's been a GoFundMe. If you could talk a little bit about the response, there's been press conferences, and you even told me off the microphone that the mayor of New York called you on the cell phone.
Yeah. I just want to go back to the beginning. When it happened, we were shooken up. We didn't think this was a big story. And all of a sudden, Saturday night, I started getting phone calls. I'm talking about 11, 12 o'clock at night. Journalists were calling me to hear the story. And I was like, I told them, I was like, okay, is this such a big deal? When you're in it, you don't think it's that big of a deal because, it happened to you. But then the next morning, it was just all over the place. I didn't think that my post will, become so popular. I just wrote, whatever I felt at the time, at the moment. I think it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. The kids went to sleep. I sat down and we put that together. But the next morning, I received phone calls from all different types of offices of politicians and journalists and all that. And all of a sudden, I got one phone call. I didn't know who it was. There was a number there, but I didn't know who it was. And I say hello, and he says, "Hi, Rabbi. This is Bill de Blasio here." And I was like, "Bill de Blasio? Okay."
I thought it was like a funny phone call. Like,
I recognized his voice, but I was shocked. I wasn't ready for that. And he was really, really sincere, and it was a great phone call. He told me how disgusted he is of all that's been going on over the last, half a year or a year, and how he's on top of it, and his office is open to me. I can call it for whatever I need.
Wow.
They were really, really supportive, and the police department, all different parts of the police department, hate crimes and you name it, they were all came down to visit, and we had a meeting together, great meeting together. It was really, really nice. But what was more than that was Saturday afternoon or morning, full time, the whole day, there were people coming in, Jews and non-Jews,
wow,
who walk by, who know us. We're part of the community. We're the only Jewish center in Bushwick. Everybody knows us. We've been there for a while. We came there before everybody else came there.
Right.
So they all know who we are. People were coming in. Some were crying. Some were hugging.
Wow.
And the journalists who were outside on Sunday who were watching this were amazed. It was like, oh, so then why did this happen here? When you have two cultures living together in a community, okay, things happen. Somebody gets upset. They do something. In Bushwick, there aren't the two cultures.
Right.
But not just that there aren't the two cultures. We're part of the community. People know us. We're connected to them. It's not like we're just, a shul that's quietly, there. We're known to everyone. We know everybody. Everybody knows us. And that's why they were shocked as much as we were shocked, or even more.
Right. It is a very unique neighborhood, much like where we are in Clinton Hill and the border of Bed-Stuy, that there's an incredible chalent of Jewish demographics. And I think it's perhaps the most diverse Jewish community on earth. I mean, on an average Shabbat, we could have anywhere from a Satma Hasid walking in the door to Sherry. So it really does span the gamut. It is so... It's so needless, and it's just so despicable, and the fact that people recognize that this is a big deal, because I will tell you that I grew up in Manchester, England, and there were many hate crimes. Unfortunately, we suffered anti-Semitism, I wouldn't say on a daily basis, but absolutely on a weekly basis. And it didn't evoke such outrage. I don't think when we had swastikas spray painted on the High Prestwich Synagogue in Manchester, certainly the mayor of Manchester was not calling, no offense to the mayor. But the fact that there's been this this outrage, I think in a bizarre way shows the unity, and I think shows the appreciation for what you do. And there was a press conference, I believe, and knowing you, Rabbi Heller, if permission to speak freely, that you people tell me Rabbi Heller is sincere. And what does Ari Stock? He always tells me, Rabbi Heller, he's in it for the mitzvah. He's an old time Chabad shliach. He's committed. He sits there and 4 o'clock in the morning every Shabbos. So you're not somebody who's used to being in the spotlight. You're not used to media. You don't write books about Batman. Put it like that.
No.
unlike another crazy rabbi that I know. So what's it been like to suddenly, be forced to, I was driving Sunday and you were all over the radio. Every hour you were on the radio.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, really? Yeah, you were on the radio. Sure. So what's that like to suddenly, go from anonymity to suddenly becoming, obviously not for a good reason. And but what's it like suddenly to be in the spotlight?
I think I could talk for my wife as well. We're not the kinds of people who like to be in the spotlight. You got that right.
I love it.
I think it's part of, I believe that Hashem, God, made this happen for a reason. And I take it the same way for everything else that we do here in Bushwick. I think this is part of it. Part of the price to pay of being a shliach, of being a Chabad emissary, is that if something like this happens, you have to take charge and be there and try to drive the message and make sure that it, you know, the right message is brought out and expressed. And that's how we took it. We spoke to whoever wanted to talk to us. We told them what we felt and what the message should be. I'll be very happy when all this is over. This is not who I am. The press conference was a very interesting press conference. It was actually planned it just the day before, where it was non-political. No politicians were allowed. It was just religious leaders from the neighborhood, from Bushwick and surrounding neighborhoods. They got together to call a press conference to show support. Their message was that an attack on one house of worship is an attack on all houses of worship. There were leaders there from all different Christian groups, and a Muslim group came as well. They actually gave a contribution to help pay for the fixing of the window.
Wow.
They did a collection in their mosque. So I think it was a very powerful message. It was very comforting to know. But again, it's all the same idea that the attackers chose the wrong, if they wanted to do something anti-Semitic, they chose the wrong synagogue. They chose the wrong neighborhood. Bushwick it shouldn't happen anywhere, of course. But, I mean, if they have an agenda, they're not pushing their agenda in the right direction when they attacked us.
So the question is, you're not going anywhere, correct? Like Friday night candle lighting, you're going to be back on in Flushing Avenue, davening and leading services till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, last Shabbos morning, we had our minion as usual with the broken window. People came back who left early. Those who missed out on the action, they were shocked when they came in the morning. But we had our minion and we sat together with the chalent and everything up until Havdalah, till the end of Shabbat. Was really, really nice and inspiring Shabbos. And this week we're going to be having it as well. We're actually starting earlier than all other than the typical Shabbos. And we hope there'll be a large turnout. And the reason we're starting earlier is because many of the non-Jews in the neighborhood said they wanted to come show support and participate. So we're starting earlier and we're going to have a longer and larger program.
Wow. So I think if there is any light from this, that you've helped others and you've given others the opportunity to show kindness and appreciation, and I think you've shown others that they can learn from your example of tolerance and an unwavering commitment to Jewish values, and you're going nowhere, and it sounds to me like you're only going to grow and increase. And I think in a bizarre way, this is going to bring an adverse response. I think whoever did this was hoping to bring you down and evoke fear in your community, but I think it's evoked and awakened love, and I think the opposite is going to happen. I think there's going to be more people coming. I don't think you're going to bed at 4 o'clock. I think this week could be 5 a.m. You may want to have some
price,
coffee
I'm very happy.
Friday afternoon.
Actually, we had a meeting last night in our shul, and somebody asked, why did this happen? Like, what's the message for us? Okay, forget about everything else. But why us personally? What do we need to learn from all this? And somebody said, well, there were so many people who came and said, we never knew there was a shul here. And that was like, okay. So God wanted us to make sure all these people know that we have a shul. And we weren't doing a good job good enough. This had to happen. So obviously, we're just going to be stronger now and pushing what we do of spreading Torah and light and kindness and everything that we've been doing, just on a larger scale. And no, we're not pushing back at all. Not at all.
Beautiful.
On the contrary.
On a practical, unfortunately, these types of incidents appear to be on the increase in America and around the world. We've had to install cameras because I've been getting over the years comments from the community, God forbid, what are we doing regarding safety? I do try and always have somebody on the door. There's actually somebody in our synagogue who's involved with the Shom Rim, and you know, the communal security. And so we've put cameras. Is there going to be cameras going forward?
Yeah, we already began installing the cameras. We also put up a stronger glass, like something that's more, that's not breakable. Part of our problem is that we're a very open place, right, open to the street.
And you're a storefront.
We're literally a storefront.
We're the same thing.
You're a storefront.
And, which I like, by the way.
I love it. And I don't want to take that away. I don't want to take that away. People feel comfortable coming in.
That's the beauty of Chabad. It's
not an hour or two late.
It's not formal. There's no one's paying membership. I mean, I wish. Yeah. No one's paying anything. But there's no membership. There's no formality. I know growing up in England, synagogue was a little stuffy, with a big vestibule as you walk in, and it felt a little intimidating, and it felt very hierarchical, whereas I think the Chabad model is decentralized. I think it's, you know, really run by the people, for the people, and that seems to be very much the model in Bushwick.
Exactly. So we're working right now, actually, the crimes preventive organization, the police department, they came down to us to do a survey for security, and they just finished the report. I'm going to meet them tomorrow morning with the final report. But yes, we are installing cameras, and we're gonna do all the things that they're recommending us to do. But at the same time, trying to keep that openness, that people feel comfortable coming and going as they wish.
Have you experienced anything like this previously in the previous 12 years?
I've had things said to us or to myself here and there. People opening the door screaming something in, or even on the street saying something. You know, I don't want to repeat it here.
I think that was Sherry. I'm joking.
Nothing like this. Nothing violent. Nothing right. violent like that. No.
And you know, nestled in between our two communities is, I think, one of the largest Hasidic communities in, and it's growing exponentially.
Maybe in the world.
Perhaps in the world. Certainly in New York. You know, 40% of New York's Jews today are Haredi.
Wow.
It's the fastest growing movement. So has there been a response from the Hasidic community, who certainly, when it comes to you know, helping in times of need, I have found it's a community that really mobilizes very quickly.
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, somebody called me last night from Kiryas Joel, from Monroe, upstate New York. There's a very large Satmar community.
Wow.
And he said, if I can leave my wife and my children for Shabbos alone, if I can arrange that, I'm coming down. I'm going to be with you for Shabbos.
Wow.
He wants to come. But yeah, there was, they called me.
Any excuse.
They came from the Shom Rim. No. No. He was all sincere. He wanted to come support us.
It's amazing.
Yes, people coming in, giving us advice of what to do and how to do, and many different things that we needed help with, that they offered help. Yes, they're tremendous, the Satmar community, when wow. it comes to these things.
By the way, if you need help with the Kiddush, by the way, I found... that a secret source of... How's the Kiddush by you, by the way?
I don't know if it's as good as yours, but they say that we make a good chalent.
Okay.
That's good enough. But
by the way, you once told me that you... We're way off topic now. But you told me that you make the kugel. That's true?
It's not fair. I make the kugel sometimes, and I make the chalent, but I follow orders. So that would be like somebody who works for a big chef saying that they make something because they work
the
in the kitchen.
From the Rebbetzin?
The Rebbetzin. It's all the Rebbetzin's kugel okay. and chalent. But I just wanted to point out that I have received phone calls and messages from Jewish communities around the world. And I'm literally saying that. Around the world, people have messaged and called and reached out. And also just random people who called and ask what they can do, or message what they can do. Hundreds and hundreds of messages from all different kinds of organizations and just regular people.
Wow, this is a very inspiring story.
Yeah.
So just to close out the podcast, I thought it was kind of perhaps somewhat apropos that this week was the small Purim. It was Purim Katan, and we know that we're now just over under a month away from the holiday of Purim. And really the message of Purim is finding, you know, the light within darkness, and you know, the fear of genocide that the wicked Haman tried to evoke upon the Jewish people was quickly averted, and quite you know, perhaps the ultimate reversal of fortune, that the same gallows destined for Jewish genocide became the gallows used for Haman. So I feel like this is a modern day Purim story. And I think this is really, it's going to lead to tremendous blessings and brachas. I think the Chabad of Bushwick is going to grow exponentially. I think you're going to need more than one storefront. I believe the loom has four, so there is room.
We already need more than one.
Okay, we all do, but... it's a big. There is one problem, which is as Brooklyn gentrifies, you know, the metrics change. It's not, you know, Brooklyn is not the Brooklyn of old. And for us to grow, I mean, the money's involved. It's very difficult. So I'm putting it out there on this podcast that if anyone wants to offer Rabbi Heller a building, a brownstone, maybe an RV trailer, Sherry, somewhere to grow the community, I think it would be an amazing thing that could happen. And as we finish the podcast, do you have any things that you've learnt on a personal level from such a terrible tragedy?
Yes, I just wanted to add to what you said. It's interesting you brought up the Purim Katan thing. Somebody in the shul told me this then, and they were saying, you know, Purim Katan was coming up, and we spoke about it earlier Friday night, and he said, and he was saying to me, I was thinking to myself, why are we still celebrating this? We're talking about a story that happened, you know, over 2,000 years ago. Why are we still talking about it? Yeah, the Baal Shem Tov says that you have to, you know, right, celebrate as if it just happened to us now. And he said, then this happens. Another, you know, something which seems like a real anti-Semitic attack. He says, yeah, we have Purim now as well. So it's interesting you brought that up. But what I learned from this more than anything else was how much support we have.
Right.
And I think that's a message that everyone needs to take, not just us as a community, as a shul, but every individual. People don't understand and they don't know how much support they have as individuals as well. And it's important for us to express that to others. When you support somebody else and you what you feel about them, it's important to tell them. People need to hear it. For us, it was important to hear it now. If I would only hear it a year ago without my windows being busted open, that would have been better. But everyone does have a lot of support, and it's important to express that to people, let them know how you support them.
So if we can come together in times of difficulty, struggle, and hardship, all the more so, Kal Vachomer, how we should come together in times of love.
That's right.
And in times of light. So I hope, apparently Shabbos, you're bringing Shabbos in early this week, right?
That's right, what's for the first time. We're going to be starting at 4:45, and we're expecting...
Start early, you finish late. You're doing it all. You're putting me to shame.
We never plan the ending. It ends when it ends, but we can plan when we start. So we plan to start this way. The press wants to be there so they can be there and be part of it. And we'll say a few words for the press. We'll do the candle lighting at the window. That's where all the girls are going to light the Shabbos candles at the fixed the windows. And then we're going to be having a very large communal Shabbos.
Well, you're becoming a media savvy over here.
It's over.
That's it, right? After this, you're back to the Tanya class with four
exactly.
people.
Okay, exactly.
I know the Zach. Okay, I know the...
I'm very happy with that.
right. Okay, this has been very inspiring. And this is one of the only Shabbosim that I'm going to be away. It's father-son weekend in Pittsburgh, and it was actually one of the most traumatic Shabbosim of my life was the terrible Tree of Life tragedy when we had two police officers come to our synagogue in the middle of services, and they told us there's been an incident. And I didn't really think there's always incidents. They said they're doing the rounds, there's been an incident. I said, what happened? He said, I don't know. And he pulls out his phone. And I, to this day, I will never forget seeing on his phone, it said mass shooting in Squirrel Hill. I didn't know what, I didn't know where. It said it was in a synagogue. And wow. my insides, that was a very, very, very
Your
long
son's yeshiva's how far from
blocks, here? Blocks away.
Wow.
In fact, my son was making the minyan in a synagogue literally across the street. He could hear the pops of gunfire. So we should never know such terrible tragedies. hopefully, you know, we should see a very swift end to these terrible anti-Semitic crimes that we're seeing all over the country and all over the world. And we're going to be, I think, putting this podcast out before Shabbos. I want to show some solidarity. And you may know, I know I'm not the mayor of New York, but I did text you.
That's right.
The next day. And I knew you must be very busy, but you did text me back, capitalized. That takes some work on an iPhone. So I appreciate that. You should know that really there's been that our synagogue, and I will not be offended if every one of my congregants decides to go over to Chabad of Bushwick this week. In fact, I encourage, and I will not be there, so you get a free pass. I encourage and I implore everybody. I know Sherry's thinking about it. Candle lighting is early, Sherry. We're going to be lighting candles outside the window that was destroyed. Sherry's telling me to get on mic. Sherry, before we leave, Sherry, we're putting it out there. Will you be attending the candle lighting in Chabad of Bushwick? As, by the way, you are a Bushwick resident. So, Sherry.
Yes, I will. I do have a friend's birthday party and other things, but no, I'm there. You have it on the record.
5 o'clock.
Yeah, 5 o'clock. You have it on the record. I have to be there now.
Wow, you see that? You see that? This whole podcast
was worth it already.
Was worthwhile to evoke the latent guilt and the Pintle Yid, the Jewish neshama in Sherry.
I'm just a secular, half Israeli, half American. What do you want from me?
You're just like everybody else in Bushwick.
Yes, Sherry. Okay, do you have any Shabbat messages, Rabbi Haller?
Shabbat messages, go out and do Shabbos. And remember that there things like this could not take us down. If the Rebbe always says that darkness is not something you have to fight. Darkness is something that gets pushed away automatically when there's a little bit of light. And lighting the Shabbos candles on Friday night, that's the message. And that's what we have to always remember. Don't get confused. Darkness confuses. It's not real. Light is real.
Wow, that's beautiful. Beautiful. Okay, so you have our support. You have our solidarity. We are here for you, and we stand together. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Rabbi Simcha.
Only good things.
And you should know that when you sent me that message and later you called me, yes, it was capital letters and my eyes did light up because I know your support and you have our back. And yes, we share some of the same congregants. And the Eibush should help that we should both have, we shouldn't have enough room in our places.
Amen.
And we should turn into one big shul from Bushwick all the way to Clinton Hill.
All right, there you go. Okay.
I'm for it.
It's about 2 miles. Okay.
It's okay.
I'm ready. All right. All right. Thank you so much. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in to the Hipsit podcast. And this is me, Rabbi Simcha, saying good night. Good night.